everyone, and happy month of May. I'm Amy Van Heren, and welcome to The Pump Spot. We're here sharing real, nourishing conversations about the beautiful ways we navigate nursing, pumping, and parenthood. May is Maternal Mental Health Awareness Month, and a really important time to talk about the journey of motherhood and the impacts it can have on our mental health. We know from this community that anxiety and depression are really on your minds, and we wanted to have a conversation about what's normal, what we as moms can do to take care of ourselves, and why community spaces to connect are so vital. We're so fortunate to be joined by the co-founders of the Motherhood Center of New York, two women who are changing the landscape of perinatal and postpartum care. We spoke with co-founder and medical director Dr. Catherine Berndorf and Paige Bellenbaum, founding director and chief external relations officer. Dr. Berndorf is also founding director of the Payne Whitney Women's Program at the New York Presbyterian Hospital Weill Cornell Medical Center, where she is an associate professor of psychiatry and obstetrics and gynecology. Paige is an LMSW, a postpartum depression survivor, and an outspoken advocate who uses her own story as a tool for change. They opened up about what brought them together to build the Motherhood Center, got honest about what postpartum mothers are really going through, shared helpful signs of perinatal mood disorders, and reflected a bit on what nourishes them right now. I enjoyed every minute of our conversation and hope that you will too. Here we go.
Paige, Dr. Berndorf, thank you so much for joining the Pump Spotting podcast.
Glad to be here.
It's a few days before Mother's Day. It's Maternal Mental Health Awareness Month. There's so much good stuff for us to talk about. Really excited to have you here. So maybe we could begin. Just tell us a bit about the work you're doing at the Motherhood Center and how you both were led to be there and how you came together to build this center of support.
Paige and I are both pointing at each other because I think for both of us, this is like, it's such a culmination of a lifelong love of something very similar. We come to it in different ways, so we can each tell you our stories, but it is a labor of love and a culmination of so much work and a long journey, and it has been an incredible process creating this center, which used to be or still is brick and mortar, but we have moved to entirely virtual for the moment during this pandemic, which is quite a thing. I come to this as a reproductive psychiatrist. When I was in medical school, I was always a feminist, always interested in women's health and women's rights. But when I got to medical school, I couldn't decide between OBGYN and psychiatry. And what I realized was I liked to sleep and it was fun to deliver babies, but more fun to hear people's stories and not be interrupted by medical issues. So I went the psychiatry route and really always married the two and really liked being able to treat women and their emotional health from menses to menopause. And now it's even more narrow in the perinatal period. So I really only do before, during, and after pregnancy, which is the focus at the Motherhood Center, trying to conceive, fertility issues, loss, and then during pregnancy, what's happening for women, and labor and delivery, birth. We deal with a lot of birth trauma and responses to that, and then in the postpartum. And we're deciding how far up into childhood we go, but for right now, probably I would say about age 2, sometimes 3, we'll see, but mostly the newborns. That's what got me here.
Paige, what about you? How did you meet?
Very, very full circle story that I never get tired of telling. So I'm a social worker by training and practice and was more kind of involved in social justice and politics and public policy. And then I had my son 13 years ago, and I was hit with debilitating postpartum depression and anxiety. And it's interesting, you know, this event that we had on Wednesday, listening to the executive director, Wendy Davis of PSI, share her story. I'd never heard her story before and realized how similar our stories were. She's also a clinician. And as a social worker, when this happened to me, like, I had no idea what was going on. Somebody who was trained to recognize mental illness and mental health symptoms in other people, I had the rug ripped out from under me. And it was a brutal 6 months. Many of those months, days, and moments were filled with regret and remorse around choosing to have a child. And there were many moments where I thought about running away or ending my own life because I felt like I'd made such a horrible mistake. Interestingly enough, I did find treatment. And it was at the program that Catherine is the founding director of, the Payne Whitney Women's Clinic. And I went there and I got treatment, began therapy, began medication. And then as I started to feel better at around 9 months after he was born, went back to work and then became obsessed with and very passionate about and very angry about the fact that so many women are not educated around perinatal mood and anxiety disorders and how common they are. 1 in 5 women during pregnancy and postpartum either develop anxiety, depression, OCD, PTSD, a whole number of diagnoses. And that number, you know, for those of us who do this work know it's much higher, especially right now during a pandemic. So I got mad and with my public policy background, started researching bills and legislation in other cities and states around what they were doing to educate, treat, screen, cobbled together what I thought would be model legislation, introduced it to a legislator, Liz Krueger, that I had been working with on affordable housing issues. She ran with it. And so for about 4 years, we tried to get it passed in the state legislature and finally did get it passed in 2014. It was a bit watered down. It wasn't exactly what we wanted, but it was a good start. And then for many years, I just was kind of focusing on PMADS on the side. I was doing other things that I was getting paid for, but all this kind of political work and education work around raising awareness. And then one day I was on the steps of a press conference for the New York City mayor's first wife who was unveiling this mental health initiative called Thrive. And I was there to share my own story with postpartum depression. And I had known Catherine along the way. I was obsessed with her because I had invited her to a number of roundtables with Senator Krueger. I mean, she is like, you know, she is the mother of all reproductive psychiatry and PMAD everything. And I was just so struck by her passion and honesty and like cutting to the chase and like so clearly being committed and dedicated to this movement of treatment and education. And I every time I saw her, I got butterflies. I don't know if I've ever told you that before, Catherine, but she came to that press conference. And so when I got off the stage, she was with another gentleman, came over and she's like, well, what are you doing right now? I'm like, I want to be doing this, right? Like, I need to do this. She's like, well, that's interesting. My partner here and I have this idea. We met for lunch one day and boom, we connected and spent a good 2 years, you know, she had already been hard at work with her original co-founder, but it was a lot of hard work. It was a lot of fun. And then an interesting thing happened. We had CBS News come and view the space when we first opened. And she said, you know, it's so interesting, your story. Is there any way that you and Dr. Berndorf might have connected while you went and got treatment at Cornell? And so Catherine had somebody go dig through paper files at Cornell, and she was on my evaluation team and was involved with my case. So it's a long-winded way of saying it sure did come around full circle, and it's been the most remarkable, joyous experience, better than I could have ever hoped.
It's amazing how sometimes, you know, the path of motherhood, I think, puts us in places and in the path of other women in ways we wouldn't expect or wouldn't have thought of until you're there. And it's so amazing to hear your story of how you came together, because in a way, sort of your orbits were probably meant to move towards one another so that you could do this work together. And tell me what drove you to think about a physical space. And I know the world has shifted to virtual, but really where you started is holding space physically for women to come together and to get support and experts and really talk about what they're going through, which is the first step and really where we need to go. So tell us how the vision came to be to have the physical space and how you brought that to life.
I would tell you that I was probably holding space, so to speak, for women struggling with PMADS. as a clinician in an overly, I probably shouldn't have been doing what I was doing, which was women who refused to go to the hospital, who really needed care, but they wouldn't go because they didn't want to separate from their babies. And thankfully, I would always drag the families in and be like, listen, you are setting up essentially an inpatient facility at your house. And unless it's good enough, like, and even then it was scary. We shouldn't be taking this risk on, right? These are women, some of whom really needed to be in the hospital, some of whom didn't, but were on the edge. And I didn't know what to do. Right. What are you going to do? Right. You just do your best in medicine. We run towards the fire. I was like, I got to help these women. These are women who are otherwise not getting care. And in a way, what the Motherhood Center is a physical space for all those women who needed this intermediate level of care, but it didn't exist. At least it didn't exist in New York City. It existed in one place in Rhode Island, starting in 2000 at Women and Infants, which was like amazing, but it really wasn't anywhere else. It wasn't happening. And I was very frustrated and frankly, like taking calls all weekend long, checking in with a family. How's everything? How's the patient? Like just at night, it was a lot of work, but I felt like if I'm not doing it, who's doing it? And so that's part of what led me to this, like this idea of creating space for this level of care that was neither inpatient nor outpatient. I mean, it's because it's a little bit of both, right? It's a day treatment program, right? In other words, it's a partial, it's designation by the state of New York and really actually everywhere in the US is a partial hospital program. So you go for 5 hours a day, 5 days a week, and there's an on-site nursery at the Motherhood Center, and we help take care of the baby. That helps to take care of you while you're trying to figure out how to deal with illness and become a mother and get mothering yourself. So it was kind of like, it came from that place of I don't know if it's desperation or like, we need something, there's something missing and let's do this thing. And so, oh my God, it was a lot of work to get a license in the state. I mean, nobody knew what we were talking about. Like a perinatal partial hospital was unheard of to OMH in New York State. And Paige was very instrumental in having been in government, knowing a lot of the players, helping us push things through. Like it was crazy making to try and get this to happen. And then I'll never forget the day we got our final license and we're at OMH and we're, you know, Albany's on the screen and everybody's sitting around this big table and we're being like grilled. And you don't know if you're going to get it, although it's supposed to be kind of this formality by the time you get to that point, but you still are, we were scared to death. And after it was all said and done, all the same people, you know, came up to us afterwards and were like, yeah, here's my card. That was great. Like, we need to stay in touch. This is super cool. So it's like, okay, well, all right. But that's kind of how it came to be. And I'll just finish by saying that what's so gratifying is when my private patients, I ultimately moved my office into the center and I'm not really seeing so many patients anymore, but initially people would come in and they would just cry. They would walk in and say, I wish this were here when I was pregnant or postpartum. And like, and I could say to them, you know what? We built this for you. Like, this is for you. You were the inspiration for this. And so it's pretty cool that, you know, that the space has become, it's just such an important space. And I know we're doing it virtually now, but I have high hopes that we'll get back to it. And I believe that this virtual space we're creating, because we're running our day hospital online, and we're kicking some butt out there. We are really, no one thought it could, we were all pretty skeptical and everybody, patients, staff, everybody was like, what? But you know what? It's working. Women are feeling held. I mean, the hardest part is childcare and that we don't have an onsite, you know, we can't help them with their babies physically, but we are doing, you know, Paige can tell you more about it, but like it's, you know what, we're not letting up. We're not giving up. We're not stopping till we can get this, you know, accessible to everyone.
Well, it must have been so rewarding to, you know, all the paperwork you had to go through and the political side of things and the, you know, there's so much that you have to navigate to get to that space. And then to be able to see the physical reactions of women, that feels so powerful. You know, for us, for pump spotting with the bus that we take across, just you can see moms sometimes come on the bus and you can see the weight almost lift off their shoulders. And you must be seeing that again and again. And then the treatment and the community and the holistic nature of what you're offering. I mean, Paige, what was it like for you in those first weeks to be standing there seeing women and mothers and the transformations that were happening around you?
That happened 3 years ago, and it feels like 300 years ago at this point. It was unbelievable and spectacular. And I think we started with a crew of four. We're now up to 30 staff members in 3 years. And like getting ready, like the weekend before we opened, like we brought our kids and we cleaned the whole facility, the bathrooms and the floors, and we got the furniture set up. And I'll never forget that first day where we're like, oh my God, what do we do if the phone rings? Like, it's really gonna happen. And then I remember our first client, one of our first clients that came to us in the day program, there was nobody enrolled in the day program yet because we had literally just opened our doors. And I remember walking around the partner of one of our first participants, one of our first patients. And he was like, it's really quiet around here. Like, there's nobody here. And I'm like, well, we have incredibly seasoned and skilled clinicians. We've based this model on a highly effective model that's been operating in Rhode Island for 20 years. We started with three. We've gone as high as 16. But yeah, there was such a sense of pride and excitement to be able to offer this level of care and support to women who wouldn't have received it otherwise. And I will say, you know, in the beginning and in the middle and up until now, one of the most beautiful things that I love about what we do is the day that a mother is graduating from the day program. That's always the last group of the day. And we call it the process and plan group. And it's really meant to think about the night ahead or the weekend ahead. And I just love that moment where a mom is able to reflect back on everything that she's gotten from the program, everything she's learned, how much better she feels, really reflect on this journey that she's been on. And what it illustrates so beautifully is what the magic sauce is in the Motherhood Center is a sense of community and camaraderie and support and empathy and all of that that women give to each other. And I found myself saying this, you know, then I hadn't said it in a while at the event we hosted on Wednesday. Motherhood is a common denominator. And, you know, a newer expecting mom might walk in there and be like, I do not belong here. I am not as sick as these people, or I have a very different problem than these people do. We're never going to connect. And they don't want to leave. And so to hear these women be able then to reflect to graduating mom, these are all the things that I've witnessed you do. These are all the ways that you've inspired me, that I've seen you grow, that I've seen you work so hard, that I've seen you become such a good mom. Like that is magical. And so just to get back to your question, I remember the first time that happened, and it's happened so many times since, and it never ever loses its power.
You're also giving so many mothers a chance to identify their feelings in a safe space and really explore what they need and what they're going through at a time period where it feels so out of control and you feel as though you can't. And so maybe you could tell us a little bit, you know, not the textbook definition, but what really is postpartum depression, you know, PMAD, what is the reality like for women that are going through this? And I know it's different for everyone, but you know, from all your time with so many of these mothers, tell us what it's like and what, you know, moms might think about.
I will give you one part of the definition, and I bet Paige will give you the other or another vantage point, but I'll come at it from kind of the medical perspective, which is that perinatal mental illness or perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, which is those are the words in PMAD, these are medical illnesses. Medical illnesses. Now they're biopsychosocial in both origin and treatment, which I don't know if everyone's heard that framework, but that's a very, a medical framework that I'm going to speak to you now as a physician. And these are real, live, true illnesses. And I think that if we don't start with that, women tend to blame themselves. Families that don't understand and think you can pick yourself up by your bootstraps don't, you know, and want to write this off as just, it's all in your head. I mean, they really need that. People need to understand. It's as if, you know, like if someone has cancer or someone has, you know, other chronic illness, that diabetes or whatever, you don't just say it's all in your head and don't worry about treatment. Like, these are illnesses just like that. And just like those. And I think that when we don't respect these medical problems like we do the others, then we're doing a huge disservice to everyone who's ever experienced something like this. Okay, I'm off my soapbox now to say that PMADS, and though we don't love the MAD part of it, like, could we get a better name? One day maybe, but it works well because it's hard to identify these illnesses sometimes. And we want people in the acronym PMAD, you can find almost anyone who's experiencing something related to this period of time can find themselves. And what I mean by that is, we used to just say, oh, postpartum depression, but that's only depression and that's only postpartum. So if somebody was anxious and they were pregnant, they didn't identify themselves, or they didn't identify with they didn't know they were having a problem. They're like, oh, this just must be pregnancy. So I think nomenclature, although fraught, is super important. And as not great as PMADS sounds, it's very inclusive, because perinatal means, you know, during and after pregnancy. So it's for those who are pregnant and those who are postpartum. And then people say, well, how postpartum? You know, I sort of feel like I have 18 and 21 year old daughters, and I feel like once postpartum, always postpartum. I'm still, you know, there are days when I'm like, I think I'm having a postpartum depression. But anyhow, it just is much more descriptive. And so what is included in perinatal mood and anxiety disorders are all the things hopefully people have heard of: depression, anxiety, generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, OCD, which is actually its own category now, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Different mood disorders include bipolar disorder, right? And psychotic disorders. Those are often on the mood disorder spectrum. So, you know, it's very inclusive, and we don't want to miss anyone. I'd rather include too many and have to say to people, hey, you don't have this, you have that. But I don't want to miss anyone, because I think women struggled to identify what was going on for them, much like Paige said, right? She didn't know she had this going on. And we just have to keep getting the word out there that there are many different things, illnesses that can happen. And when they happen becoming a mother, we call them PMADS, or, you know, but they are really just those illnesses at this period of time.
I can just add some of the common descriptors that we hear women use to describe what they're thinking and feeling: hopeless, helpless, crying frequently throughout the day, feeling irritable, rageful. In fact, I think that anger and rage is a symptom that, and Catherine, correct me if I'm wrong, that doesn't necessarily go synonymously with generalized depression or anxiety, but it can be very active and prevalent if somebody's experiencing a PMAD. Panic attacks, what I refer to as the hamster wheel, where our mind is going around and around and around and around, and we can't turn it off. We're catastrophizing. We're going from the situation in front of us to the worst possible case scenario. We're having a hard time distracting ourselves from falling into the bottomless pit of information on the internet. And we're constantly looking for answers to substantiate our catastrophizing thoughts. Our sleep is being disturbed. Even if the baby's able to sleep well, and for stretches of period, mom isn't able to sleep because she's so anxious and can't turn off the thoughts. Appetite is often impacted and affected, either eating very, very little or overeating. So many women will come into treatment and say, I've lost more than the baby weight that I gained. I'm a lower weight now than I was before I got pregnant, and I lost it in like 3 weeks because that has been so impacted. And just feeling this sense of fear and like, it's always going to be this way. Like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. I've made a terrible mistake, and this is the way my life is going to be forever. And those are some of the ways that you know, I certainly felt, and so many women describe this feeling of what it is to have a PMAT. And all of those feelings kind of fit into different diagnoses, but those are some of the general things that come up for women that are struggling.
And so how do we identify what's normal and what's, you know, we've all have the emotional turmoil that comes with giving birth and breastfeeding and the hormones and the time commitment and all these things. And so how do you help all your mothers and families? How can we think about, especially during this time period where things, the anxiety levels are so much higher and the support systems aren't as prevalent around us as usual, how do we think about what's normal and what is maybe not?
Well, that's a great question always. And it's an even better question right now during the time of COVID-19. So, you know, I think it's always been a little confusing because symptoms of first trimester pregnancy and symptoms of depression or anxiety can look the same. They're confounded. That is also true in the postpartum, right? You're not sleeping well, you're not eating well, you're rested, you're fatigued, you're not able to do your normal things. So people will say things like, oh, well, this is how it's supposed to be. I think I'm supposed to be feeling like this. But as Paige listed off some of those symptoms that we find very universally among women with PMADs, you know, it is never, quote, normal to be hopeless, to not find joy in anything, to feel like you wish you hadn't done this, or to feel like you wish you were dead. I mean, those are pretty much never normal. So I think that when women are experiencing those profound symptoms, it's maybe a little easier, but then sort of the more grayer zone is just like, I think one way to think about it is level of symptomatology and acuity of it. And what I mean by that is, how distressed are you by the things you're feeling? Even if you can't name any of them, what is your level of distress and how is it impacting your functionality? Like, how are you living your life? Is it the same? Is it, you know, are you unable to do what you normally do? Can you not work? Can you not think straight? Can you not read a book? I mean, what are the things that you used to do that you are finding that you cannot do? How dysfunctional do you feel secondary to the amount of distress and symptoms you feel? So those two things. So it's distress level and level of dysfunction. And I think when you look at those two things, that's how we define clinical disorders from just sub-syndromal, you know, things. Like, people can have depressive symptoms. They can have anxious symptoms. That doesn't mean you have an anxiety disorder or a depressive disorder. It means we've all got symptoms of those some days, not other days. People have bad days. They have anxious days, particularly now during COVID. So it can be complicated, but really, how long, you know, how acute, how deep, how dark, how prevalent, how long is it lasting, right? Are you getting back to yourself or not? And by the way, you can always ask a professional, is this normal or not? So I think that there are many ways to think about it, but hopefully that helps your listeners to maybe identify within themselves if they need to reach out.
Yeah, I think just asking that question and also maybe equipping people around you to key in to how you're
for
doing.
Sure.
And, you know, I would imagine, certainly my husband was vital when I was in that phase. If he knew what was the new normal for me and whether that was kind of going up and down versus the old person, you know, the old, you know, woman that I was or what have you. And so kind of the checking in on one another, which maybe relates to this community aspect and why it's so important together.
When I was drafting the legislation for New York around education and screening, one thing that did remain in there that was so important to me was that partners be involved in education. Partners and family members need to know what to look for almost more than mom does, because when you're a new expecting mom and you are experiencing the gravity of these symptoms that really render you paralyzed. I mean, I remember my husband asking me like at least 20 times to try and apply for short-term disability when I was on maternity leave, especially since I was gone for over 6 months because of my mental illness. I couldn't do it. I oftentimes share this story with moms in the day program about this bike that I, for whatever ridiculous reason, bought while I was pregnant, because I thought when I had the baby, I would be riding my bike around the East Village in Manhattan, because that's what new moms do. And I had the baby, brought him home, was almost immediately symptomatic. And every day my husband would say, you got to bring the bike in. Like, it was this really fancy specialized bike. And I didn't do it. And he kept saying, you got to bring the bike in. Like, someone's going to steal the bike. Every day something went missing. First it was one tire, then another tire, then the handlebars, and then the wheels and the seat. And at the end, all that was left was this skeleton of what used to be this beautiful bike. And when I realized like the power of that parallel, like that bike was me and everything was stripped from me. I was just a skeleton of myself, but I couldn't go down. I couldn't do something as simple as going downstairs and picking up the bike and bringing it up. So family members have to know what to look for. And for OBGYNs and pediatricians and any other kind of provider that is out there that might be listening, It's family members that need to be well-versed in what to look for, because when mom is there, she oftentimes doesn't know what to do. And one of the reasons why I felt so strongly about us having a life preserver as a logo is because I felt like I was drowning in a deep, dark bottom of the sea. And I was just paddling as quickly and hard as I could just to keep my head above water. And all I wanted was for someone to throw me a life preserver and pull me out. And that's oftentimes a family member.
Hey friends, we want to take a quick break and remind you of all the places you can connect with us and this lovely pump spotting community. If you're a nursing, pumping, or new mom, or a seasoned mom who just wants to get back, hop on our app. If you're also working or you're part of a company that wants to support breastfeeding employees, then Pump Spotting at Work is for you. Find out more at pumpspotting.com.
So right now, I would imagine that more women than ever might be feeling as though they're swimming upstream or in that current or that tide. And even if, you know, for moms who aren't at that level of, you know, extreme diagnosis, what you just had this amazing webinar on Wednesday with so many wonderful people and voices, you know, what are some of the tips and the ideas, and how are you just generally helping moms think about how to be gentle with ourselves, how to talk to ourselves, how to cope with the added levels of anxiety and the missing support systems and all the things that are taking place right now during this?
Well, we are trying to meet the needs of what's coming our way. So I would say the best, if we knew how to do anything, we know how to listen and pivot and get creative at the Motherhood Center. That's how we started. I always like to tell the story that first week when Paige was describing walking around this prospective patient and her husband, and we were still like painting and getting it together. That first week, and she was one of three patients, we started on a Monday, had to close because of a snowstorm on a Tuesday, and then we had day two on a Wednesday. By Friday of that week, there were three forlorn husbands sitting on the couch in the like reception area, not talking to each other, like looking like sad sacks, like who'd been, who know, hadn't slept, didn't know what to do, deers in headlights. And we saw them. And one of our colleagues who worked with us was like, we need a dad's group. Like, what is going on? And we knew it. And once we could put a name to it, she called up her husband and was like, he was a psychiatrist. And she said, can you get over here and run a group? We're like, come on. And that was it. Thus the dad's group was born. And Paige ran it this morning. It is literally run at Fridays ever since the first week we opened. And it is to that point about partners, understanding and psychoeducation and telling people what's going on, helping them understand what's happening for the woman who's suffering. It's so essential. So I feel like we're trying to meet the need during this pandemic. So, you know, we got ready early. We felt like, you know, we have babies on site, mothers and babies. We knew that if COVID came near us, which I'm sure it did. We probably had many near misses, but boy, we got, when we saw the writing on the wall, we said, we got ready 2 weeks in advance. We closed our doors on March 13th and people were like, what? This is it's too early. Nothing's happening. You don't know which way it's going to go. I happen to be married to a physician who's a frontline person who was starting to see what was happening in the hospitals, and others knew, you know, were getting the feeling. And we made the call Friday the 13th, Monday morning the 16th. We opened virtually, and a lot of resistance, patients and staff alike, but it was one of our better moves thus far. And this is the end of our eighth week doing full on day program online. I'm happy to report that it's going very well. We are still helping mothers and families and babies. The only thing, I think the biggest deficit, is that we cannot help babysit. We cannot help hold those babies when you are just overwhelmed. And childcare is one of the biggest issues we're seeing right now. You know, assuming your basic needs are met and your health is okay, because that cannot be assumed anymore. Things have just really turned upside down. But to your question, we are really trying to figure out, when we get phone calls, we take every phone call very seriously. It's like gold. Anyone who calls in, we have 10 different systems for writing down what they called about, who referred them, what do they need, could we help them, how do we direct them in the right direction if we can't do it. And we're trying to figure out, distill kind of what is needed now. And we are trying to meet those needs. And so we'll start a new group in a week. And maybe Paige can talk more to that, because she's been, you know, getting the word out there. So we have lots of stuff that we didn't have, you know, last week, the week before, and certainly before this whole pandemic began.
So many of the therapeutic modalities that we institute in at the day program, and also in our outpatient treatment and support groups and what have you, call upon these skills and techniques that are more appropriate now than ever before. You know, cognitive behavioral therapy really gets at trying to interrupt an unhelpful thought and replace it with a helpful thought. Dialectical behavioral therapy really teaches us, gives us tools in our toolbox to make room for the fact that we can have two or more feelings at once. We can look at our baby and think that he or she's the cutest thing ever, and also feel like we've made the biggest mistake of our life. Learning how to accept, the term radical acceptance, the things we cannot control or change, but really focus our efforts on the things that we can control and change. And I think these are just a handful of some of the pertinent skills that we are teaching women to use and build that muscle over and over again so that it comes easily and normally. And these types of skills apply to every new and expecting mom out there right now, right? Because what are we grappling with? We're grappling with things that are out of our control. We're grappling with the unknown. What do we have to do? Well, we can't fix it. We can't change it. We have to radically accept the fact that we can't control the situation and we don't know what's going to happen. So I wanted to highlight just for your listeners that a lot of those skills, I mean, I kind of feel like our moms that are graduating from the day program right now are like superheroes. Like they can handle really anything. They can handle a PMAT on the backdrop of a pandemic. Like these ladies, they got some skills. So these are some of the things that we teach that are helping, and I think can be helpful to women, whether they're in the day program or not, that are new and expecting moms.
In the webinar, Dr. Fiss said that the internal strength she's seeing from women and mothers right now is just so inspirational and through the charts. And it really is. I know we talk a lot about the anxiety and the struggles, but it's also been pretty tremendous to see the strength and the resolve and the way we're showing up to support one another. And I mean, it gets me a little emotional because in some ways there's also so much beauty that's happening as we're coming together in this way. And one of the things that I'm really curious about, because I can feel your passion from here, being creative, pivoting, listening, those are all, that's what mothers do. And you're doing it for your business. And you both are also through a pandemic. I mean, how are you nourishing yourselves as you try and give and give during this?
Well, that is the million-dollar question. It is a struggle. I'm going to be honest. I think that just like it is for everyone else, I think there have been some really interesting articles in the Times before I get out of bed every morning, I cruise the headlines and I always read the articles that are, there's so many pertinent to what we do. And I feel like, you know, how do the caregivers, the frontline providers, the essential workers, you know, help themselves and provide, you know, self-care, taking care of themselves, nourishment during this time when we are giving and giving and giving. And it's, so I just want to start by saying it's hard, right? Like I just, honestly speaking, I am finding it harder than ever. That said, when you don't leave your house much, my favorite coping mechanism is taking a nap. So considering I'm sitting next to a bed in my daughter's room, you know, if I get a half an hour, I put my timer on and I take a nap. And I certainly am, you know, watching good TV, like stuff that I wouldn't have let myself, I don't know, I'm a probably a workaholic, but I like good, I've binged, you know, Netflix, and we're doing family time and we're having dinner together every night. Like that's one, I'd say that's probably the, you know, everyone meets at the dinner table at night, and we have had family dinner consistently for the last 10 weeks. It's been really, really nice. That is very nourishing to me as a mom, you know, and I like a long shower and I like a good walk and I'm Zooming with friends and, you know, still meeting with my women's groups on Zoom. And that's, you know, it's like, you got to keep up your old stuff and invent some new things to keep yourself sane and healthy. You know, but I will say it is hard and it's tiring. You know, why is Zoom so exhausting? Like there's so much, it's like using different muscles in the brain and the fatigue that comes with it. At the end of the day, I am toast. And I didn't used to be like that, but it's like a whole new, you know, it just feels very new to be focusing and functioning this way. But, you know, so I'm figuring it out as I go, but it's a struggle for those of us who are providing care just as much, I think, as those getting care.
I am probably for the first time in my life entertaining the act of being more present than I ever have before. I have this pathology that Catherine is quite familiar with and my husband points out frequently. It's the pathology of what's next. And so like with every, you know, creative, innovative thing that gets done, like what's the next thing? What's the next thing? And this experience has really taught me to just really be in the moment more and recognize what's happening right here and now. And as Catherine said, I have some really, really, really rough days where there's a lot of tears and there's a lot of anger and there's a lot of confusion and there's anxiety in trying to figure out what the future holds, which every single human being on this planet is grappling with, mental health providers as well. And then there are days where, like, I hope my kids can't hear me, but like my son went on his first virtual date on Wednesday and he has another one tonight. And like, I might've missed that before, right? Like, you know, I'm not sure why he decided to do it in the middle of the living room and told my husband and I to find somewhere else to go, but I might not have been as present to notice that. Or, you know, the interactions that we have in the morning, whereas I used to be the first one out the door to get to work, now it's like a hub and everybody's there and my husband and I are drinking a coffee and the kids are filling us in on what the day looks like. And again, to Catherine's point, like that sense of coming together is something that I had really unintentionally eliminated from my life prior to the pandemic. And I feel a lot less irritable. I'm not really asking your question about what I'm doing to help myself feel that way, other than just, I guess Catherine and I are both a little crazy when it comes to work. She totally takes the cake in a wonderful way, even more than me. But like, I don't know. I've somehow kind of taken some of the pressure off of myself, which is a relief and allows me to kind of pay closer attention to what's going on.
It's a gift. I feel that way sometimes too, that we're almost allowed to take the pressure, the foot off the pedal, that like the world has given us a reason to allow ourselves to let our foot off the accelerator a tiny bit. And it's hard. It's still so challenging, but there's a lot of grace in being able to just take that as for what it is. I am so impressed by your honesty and you're inspired by your work and all that you are doing to change things. And I have one more question before we go, but I just sincerely am so, so moved by all you're doing for mothers. And I'm so grateful that you spent this time with me. And before we go, we love to leave the community with just with one sentiment from each of you about what do you want to say to moms? What do you want them to take away from this world right now?
I'm going to go with the what popped into my mind first, because I have a million things to say, but I hope this isn't what Paige is going to say, because I've heard you say this, Paige, but I think the sentiment that came to mind was, you got this. You got this. She's mad at me, but it is true. It is how I feel. Like, don't give up. Don't back off. Ask for help. Don't be quiet. Get louder. Get angry. Move forward. Go towards it. Lean in. Okay, I just gave you a million others. But in the end, like, you got this. Like, we have strength. Women are freaking strong. We are, I hate to say it, but perhaps the stronger of the species. And we've had to be, right? We bear these children. I mean, who could do that? That's remarkable. So it's within all of us. And if we can see forward and dig deep, we can do it. I have no doubt whatsoever.
All right, she's still mine, but I got more. I would say, listen, new and expecting mamas out there, there ain't no thing like called perfection right now. In a pandemic or not in a pandemic, there's no thing as the perfect mom. There's no thing as the perfect house. There's no such thing. I really want moms to know we are winging it here. We are in uncharted territory, and nobody in the world has ever done this, ever, like this. And so I want to tell moms out there, please be kind to yourself. Please use self-compassion. Please give yourself a break. If you yell at one of your older children or your partner and you walk away feeling guilty, look, that's going to happen sometimes. We are under an enormous amount of pressure. We are doing the best we can. And just recognize you're doing a good job. And that is all we can aim to do right now, is a good job. And that this isn't a forever. There is going to be another side to this. We are going to be connected with a higher sense of freedom and flexibility again. But to end with Catherine's point, you got this. And also, don't be afraid to ask for help, and just know that help is out there. The Motherhood Center is available. Even, you know, this event we did, we were looking at the map of people who registered. It was crazy. Like, people in Asia and Europe and Africa, like, people all over the world called in to be a part of this. And I share that because you're not alone. You're part of a community of new and expecting moms who are trying to make sense of this time that we're in, and we're all together, and there's help out there.
Tell everyone how they can find the Motherhood Center and what you're offering to help moms right now, especially in this time period.
We have our day program, as we talked a lot about today. We also do virtual therapy, medication management for both pregnant and new moms and women that are trying to conceive. So figuring out what medications are safe during pregnancy and postpartum. We offer a whole slew of support groups. We have a PMAD support group that meets twice a week, a sleep support group, a pregnancy support group, a partners and dads support group. We're really trying to move in on all of these niches, so that we can offer all of these different populations a sense of community. We've been doing a whole host of webinars on everything ranging from managing stress and anxiety to what to anticipate during delivery. We have one coming up next week all around breastfeeding with a lactation consultant and a pediatrician. Another one the following week all about essential workers that are pregnant and postpartum and what that is like for them. So we're trying to cover all of our bases, from education, support, and treatment. And if people are interested in learning more about us, and we have this flexibility now, a lot of states have relaxed laws around treatment, which is giving us a bigger footprint to be able to provide care in a way that being just one bricks and mortar location was limiting. But visit our website at www.themotherhoodcenter.com, or just call us at 212-335-0034. We have lovely care coordinators that are at the ready, who literally will give people like white glove service. They are so dedicated and committed to these women that are struggling. They will, from the beginning until they hand them off to treatment with our facility or elsewhere, they've got your back, and they will hold you through the process. So reach out and ask for the help that you need.
Well, Paige, Catherine, let me just say that you both have really got this. So thank you on behalf of all the moms. Keep going. Thanks so much for coming by to talk to me today.
Thank you, Amy. It was a pleasure.
Great to talk to you.
This has been the Pump Spotting Podcast. We'll be continuing the conversation and hanging out over on our app. We hope you'll come by to share your story and thoughts. And if you haven't already downloaded Pump Spotting, it's quick and easy to set up your profile and join the community. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to our wonderful production team at Pitchwire, who partner with us to bring you these stories. We'll see you next time, and remember, you are capable, you are radiant, and you are not alone.